from Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 103, recorded on September 17th, 2025. I am your master of ceremonies, as always, Jason Snell, and I am joined again by Under the Knife's very own Will Carroll. Will, welcome back to Downstream. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on this auspicious week. So much happening, but you there at St. Jude's. Great cause, so I hope lots of money is raised.
Thank you very much. Yes, I'm doing this from Memphis, Tennessee. The Podcastathon is returning for Childhood Cancer Awareness Month again. It's going to be the best one yet. We were just going over it today. Mark your calendars. Friday, September 19th from 12 p.m. noon Eastern until midnight Eastern. Tune into the Relay YouTube channel for 12 hours of fun and silliness and raising money for St. Jude. So people should check it out. I've been here for a little while now. Kind of an amazing place. Some of the world's most highly cited scientists. In November of 24, there were 11 different St. Jude researchers named to the annual list of highly cited researchers recognizing international impact in science, authoring multiple scientific papers, ranking in the top 1%. By citations, which refers to how often a published paper is included as a reference by other investigators in their work. Basically, when we say it is about St. Jude is a research hospital, it really does mean both of those things. St. Jude is an organization that is funding patients to come. They don't pay a dime, treating these kids, making space for their families to be with their kids when they're fighting cancer. And it's also about buildings full of researchers and scientists who are using data from the world, from their studies, and from their patients to come up with new and better treatments for cancer and improving cancer research all over the world. Both of those things happen at St. Jude. That's what one of the reasons that it's such a special place. If you want to donate during our campaign, you can go to stjude.org/relay. And if you are around a computer on the 19th, Friday, from 12 noon to midnight Eastern, check us out on the Relay podcast YouTube stream. All right. So thank you, Will. And let's get into it. Let's start with Paramount and Warner Brothers Discovery. The Wall Street Journal reported over the last week, although I will give a shout out to Puck News, which really did say this was going to happen a month or two ago. David Ellison, who has taken over Paramount, wants Warner Brothers Discovery. All of it, including the cable companies and stuff, which is interesting because David Zaslav is trying to spin them off. I kind of assume in hope that he could get a streamer who is not, you know, a tech company that does not want to buy cable assets to bid for the studio, you know, Netflix or Apple or Amazon. But based on the reporting from the Journal and some stuff I've read in Puck, it also seems like David Ellison might be able to make an offer that the board at WBD just can't refuse. I think there are a lot of people who look at this and go, well, this is great. This is really exciting. I also know that there are a lot of people in Hollywood who are kind of terrified of this because it's, basically almost certainly a studio merger and there's one fewer major studio making stuff and one fewer streaming service buying stuff. And that's a little bit scary at the same time. Even if Ellison is bringing his dad's money to bear, it's something that we're going to have to watch just because, you know, just now that the Paramount circus is over, a new circus has come to town. Well,
exactly. And I find it interesting that he's kind of doing this preemptively, that they're jumping in, wanting the whole thing, not waiting for it to divide Universal Versant-esque.
Yeah.
So I am intrigued by this. In a great way, just because I don't see how you put it all together. And then on top of this, you take a look at the fact that Larry Ellison, who was in large part the funding for the Skydance Paramount deal,
sure,
also just bought some percentage and some algorithm and some stuff for this little thing called TikTok.
Yeah.
Does that suddenly become a part of this whole thing?
Right.
Do they... Yeah, because it's not like Andreessen Horowitz has a studio. So I just don't know where this all goes. For Zaslav, I think he just wanted to be the head of Warner Brothers. He's like, I want to be all the Warner Brothers. And this would likely mean he's out. And
yeah,
given how much money he made, I hope he saved.
Well, he's made a lot of money. And I think if they buy WBD, he will make a lot more money. But I think there it is undoubtable that David Zaslav loves being a mogul. He loves the attention. He loves going to the U.S. Open and being seen and going to various other events and being seen. But you know, there are big, this is the thing, with like there are billionaires and then there are billionaires. Not only are there millionaires and then billionaires, but then they're billionaires and then they're like big billionaires. And this is one of the things here. It's like David Ellison with his dad's money as well. Like they could do this and they can make an offer. And no matter what Zaslav's plan is, they may not be able to turn it down. I think that was one of the points of some of the analysis I saw here, is that if they make an offer at a certain stock price, it's going to be impossible to say no, even if Zaslav, I do think, is thinking longer term about, if I split this off and I load some debt on that, and then I'm in a better place and that I can make a move, or I've got a better recombination with somebody else, or maybe a tech giant will buy me. And the advantage of Apple, I'm not sure if Apple or Amazon or Netflix is remotely interested in buying the Warner Brothers studios and HBO Max. I don't know if that's true or not, but certainly it would be the most palatable object if you're thinking of a tech giant swallowing a studio, because it doesn't have a TV network and it wouldn't have cable channels attached to it, other than presumably HBO, which is so much more than its cable channels now. It's an interesting idea, and maybe that's what he's sort of thinking, is if we're going to sell, we could be worth way more because we would get some bidders who have lots of deep pockets. I just don't know if it's going to come to that. And yeah, there is a question. I know, like, there's this the TikTok investment and the existence of Warner Brothers as a Skydance company suggests that theoretically there could be, you know, Paramount, a Skydance company, could also be Warner Brothers, a Skydance company. That idea, right? That it could be like, he could even like say, well, no, they're kind of working in parallel, but we know that the whole back end would end up being found redundant and merged. And even if they had two studios, it would essentially become one studio with a couple of shingles eventually. Like, it seems inevitable. I will say this for this, and I wonder what you think about this. The one thing that makes a lot of sense to me, if I'm thinking about David Ellison, is scale. Max and Paramount Plus put together has more audience. It's not enormous, but it's a lot better as a streamer. Mm-hmm. And it's got some premium content with HBO, and it's got you put the two sports portfolios together, and it's not bad. It's better. I don't know if it's worth whatever he's going to pay for it, but I think if he's afraid that the long-term media landscape requires scale, and if you're not big enough, you are not going to make it, this is a way for him to get maybe big enough.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. There's a couple other things we have to look at first. Anybody that doesn't follow this, Oracle made about $1 gazillion last week, and AI stuff. But Larry Ellison, personally, I think it was $110 billion that he got in a single day after announcing how much money they were making. The stock price went up. Yep. He passed Elon Musk. He bought, again, some of TikTok, and that's like pocket change. But the thing here is they've got all the money in the world virtually, or at least a bigger chunk than anybody else. Add into that the political climate, where it's very unlikely there's going to be an antitrust turn down. They're not going to say no. These are politically influential people,
yeah,
beyond just the fact that they're rich.
Yeah.
So you add that in. So this could happen. I think the other thing there is that HBO, which do they keep? You know, if this was a true merger and they have to come up with a new name, which do they keep? You know, Skydance becomes kind of the holding company, mm-hmm. kind of in the way that National Amusements owned Paramount, but nobody knew what the heck National Amusements was, and he probably still don't. So I think it's a good thing. Let me go back to the other thing, though. Netflix, Apple, Amazon, have they ever bought something like this?
I know, right? I
mean, Apple is, you know, Amazon notoriously
bought MGM, so sort of, but not really, not like this.
Yeah, but that was a couple $1 billion, yeah. Right? And it made sense just for James Bond and unlocking that. And let's see them do something with that, please, soon. I'm just curious whether, you know, Apple, their still biggest thing is Beats, which was, what, $3 billion at the time?
And you would think that if Apple's going to spend money on anything at this point, it's going to be an AI company, not a movie studio.
Yeah, and that might take all the money.
You know, they could buy this and put Seth Rogen in charge. Oh, wait a second. Exactly. That's a TV show.
Thanks, Sal Saperstein.
I'm not sure anybody wants it in the tech side, but mm-hmm. I do wonder if Zaslav is kind of hoping that he could get more bites if he divests the debt of some of his debt and all those cable assets and does a Versant on them, puts them out there. I do think it's also interesting that the reports are like David Ellison doesn't want to play those games. He just wants to buy it all and just have it. And then he can figure it out and he can figure out the best way to maybe put the assets together and take the stuff that he doesn't want and put it off somewhere else. And probably in the long run, you know, I'm not sure even he wants CBS, but he's got it for now.
I think this CBS / CNN combination would be very intriguing.
I think Joe and I talked about that last time. I think that would be an inevitability, right? Is that you collapse CBS News and CNN into a single news gathering organization. And you make a good point that we mentioned last time, and I got to bring up again, which is Larry Ellison and David Ellison are favored in the current administration. Mm. And as a result, you know, I think that is probably going to win out over any arguments of, oh, it's consolidation in the media and it's increasing the media structure. There are members of the Republican Party who will speak out and say, no, we don't want more powerful people in the media. But I feel like in this current environment, the answer will be, well, yeah, but these are our guys. And like, I think that maybe is foolish, but I think that that's how they operate. It's like, I think these guys have pleased them to the point where they could do more of this, and they're probably going to be able to get away with it.
I am curious if David Ellison can just bid against himself and be fine. He can bid overbid and be fine. But when you look at it, I don't think the tech guys really have the it doesn't fit in their wheelhouse. Sure, they could buy it. Yes, they have the money. They just haven't usually bought these things. On the other hand, normally you would start talking about, you know, European companies or you know, even Rupert Murdoch or somebody. Those are the ones where I don't think they're even considered now. You know, you're not going to see Televisio or one of those come in. Carlos Slim is not going to invest.
No.
I don't even know who could be. In Europe right now, Canal is, you know, a mess, and
that's
certainly not gonna
never going to be allowed, right? Like right. A non-American company buying an American movie studio is just it's not going to happen. I mean, Sony did it with Columbia back in the day. It never would be allowed now.
Murdoch and Fox.
Yeah, well,
everybody thinks of him as American.
Yeah, well, that's true. But again, they got out of that business, and they don't want to go back in it.
Exactly. He's not bidding. Yeah. The other thing to keep in mind here is, you know, the whole succession drama, the real part, went down with Murdoch. So I don't think that Lachlan's going to get involved this quickly. But you would normally have thought, you know, the Murdochs and News would get involved in all this. And taking them off the table just seems weird.
It is. But I think that's what the Disney deal did, is that they went in some other directions. Although, who knows? I mean, that is going to be an interesting thing generationally now that the succession drama has been resolved and Lachlan is firmly going to be in charge, that they paid enough. Everybody's got a price. Apparently the other siblings can walk away with $1 billion and not have to worry about changing Fox News.
One of the interesting things of that settlement that not a lot of people paid attention to is that they bought out Rupert's older kids, not his younger kids, who are now in a new trust with Lachlan.
Yeah.
They're the Wendy Deng kids, who is Chinese, very tight with the Chinese Communist Party, very tight with Vladimir Putin, you know, with rumors they were dating for a while. And now, conceivably down the line, those kids could own major media and other assets. I just thought that was one of those little footnotes that nobody paid a lot of attention to just because it's not immediate.
It's pretty wild. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Claude from Anthropic. Claude is a next-generation AI assistant built by Anthropic and trained to be safe, accurate, and secure to help you do your best work. I've been playing around with Claude. I'm going to tell you a story. Right tool for the right task. I had a podcast that I recorded recently, and we didn't write down potential episode titles. And so I generated a transcript of that podcast, and I sent it to Claude, and I said, listen, Claude, I need you to come up with some suggestions for titles for this podcast based on this transcript. Now, I've tried this with some other AI engines over the last few months, and it hasn't worked really well, but I thought, you know what? I've got Claude right here. I'm going to give it a try. And it did a great job. Not all of its suggestions were perfect, but you know what it did? It found a bunch of candidates that combined with my memory of this podcast episode that I had participated in. I was able to zero in very quickly on a title that fit perfectly. And it was an episode sort of about AI. So ironically, an AI helped choose the title. It's pretty good, pretty smart. I've also used Claude for some scripting stuff, fixing some of my Python and generating some answers to little, I want to do this subroutine in Python, and it's done a really good job, really smart at building some little programming bits for me to look at and then insert in my scripts. Again, right tool for right job. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you, whether you're in debugging code mode at midnight. Whether you're strategizing another business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle problems that matter. It doesn't just give you answers. It helps you think through the problem. Claude's internal and external research capabilities go way deeper than basic web search. Comprehensive, reliable analysis with proper citations for clients, turning hours of research into minutes, and you can see the citations and have confidence in them. Claude can add context from your calendar, your emails, and all of your go-to tools. It's like having a central brain for all of your work. No more digging through multiple tools and documents. I just connected Claude to my Gmail. Like, Claude, find it in there. Very smart. Really kind of amazing. And if you're ready to tackle bigger problems, sign up for Claude today. And you're going to get 50% off Claude Pro when you go to claude.ai/downstream. That's claude.ai/downstream. Right now, 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro, including access to all the features mentioned in this ad spot. That's all lowercase letters, claude.ai/downstream. Thank you to Claude for supporting Downstream. All right, let's move on and talk about sports fans feeling the pinch. This is a story that there have been a few different polls done. I've got a couple here. I don't know if there are others that you wanted to reference, but I think this is worth talking about, this conversation that's happening, especially as the NFL season is getting started and the NFL has deals with Prime Video, and they've got, you know, they've got stuff that's on Peacock as well as on NBC. They've got their CBS and Fox deals. Mm-hmm. They've got their ESPN deal. There's the ESPN over the top if you don't have cable. There's all of these different places that you can see the NFL. And people added it up and said, well, if you want to see every NFL game, you have to pay all of this kind of stuff, which is not, mm-hmm, I think, a real realistic scenario. But like, it's not a bad thing to open up the conversation about it. So two things that I'll just throw out there before we start talking about it. One is there's an AP poll that said sports fans are, and this is why we talk about sports so much on Downstream, sports fans are more likely to subscribe to literally anything, any kind of TV service. Sports fans are say they are more likely to subscribe to it than people who do not classify themselves as sports fans. But especially they're more likely to subscribe to, obviously, sports streaming services, but also cable, satellite, or live streaming platforms. And also about half of the people who subscribe are unhappy with the cost, the price that they pay. And then just throwing a little more data from a Pew Research study this summer, 83% of Americans say they watch streaming. Only 36% say they watch cable and satellite TV at home. It's 90% for people under the age of 50, which is wild. And if you want the demographic breakdown or the behavioral breakdown, 28% people said they subscribe to streaming services. 55% or subscribe to cable and satellite and streaming, 28%. So that's where I am, is both. 55% are streaming only. 8% are cable or satellite only. traditional TV. And 8% said they're neither, which I think either means they don't watch TV or they've got a pair of rabbit ears and that's about it. And only 44% in that survey said that they were satisfied with the cost. And this all comes up because we talk a lot about sports, you and I. Balkanization of sports rights is a way that a lot of leagues are fighting against the death, especially of cable and of cable sports networks. But that is already becoming the next big story, next big trend in this. And I think the thing we're going to be talking about for a long time is when you turn to different providers and carve off parts of your package so that there's, you know, not, it's not just I get cable and I see it all, but it's, but you also need Peacock and you also need HBO Max and you also need, you know, whatever it is, ESPN or Apple TV Plus or Prime Video or Netflix. And it means following your favorite team. We already got a flavor of this when Apple took Friday night, right? I mean, because unlike ESPN taking Sunday night baseball and saying, we own this, you have to have cable to watch us. But that was like TV. People had cable TV. Apple was a thing that basically, like, if you want to watch your favorite team and they're on a Friday night baseball game, the only way to do it is to pay Apple. That's like the only way you get that game. And a lot of people were offended by that. This is the canary in the coal mine for this, I think, because I think that they're going to where the money is and they're taking the money for the large part. But the danger there is if you're a fan, do you follow your favorite team to 8 different streaming services in order to get a complete picture, or do you kind of wave your hands and be like, no, it's not worth it to me? What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think the one thing that has to be emphasized here is the reason sports fans feel they have to subscribe is because you can't wait. It's a live game.
Yeah.
If you're gambling,
you can't
churn on it
through it once the season is dropped or whatever, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Like I started watching Alien Earth and I was like, okay, this is really great, but I think this would be better if I could just watch it all at once so I don't kind of have to have things happen for a week in between. I can avoid spoilers reasonably well. Mm-hmm. I can't avoid a sports score.
No.
If I'm a gambler, I've got to have it live. And I'm complaining about the fact that I'm a minute behind on most streams. Your buddies at work are going to talk to you about what happened at the Colts game, the 49ers game, whatever game, the Fever game. You can't avoid that. The spoiler potential is through the roof. So you have to have that. And if you're a, you know, real fan, you're going to pay basically whatever. We see that with ticket prices. And Live Nation today talking about, you know, rational pricing, which basically means an auction.
Yeah.
They want to capture all those SeatGeek prices.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. But I think if we go back to the last topic a little bit, this balkanization is real. But if there's conglomeration, is that the opposite of balkanization? What would be the opposite of
that? I mean, yeah,
Yugoslavia?
Aggregation, unification. Yeah, exactly. Yes, apologies to the former Yugoslavia, but this is a thing that we have to talk about.
Shout out Josip Broz Tito. Mm. It's one of those where if Warner Brothers, which has, or HBO Max has, I don't even remember what at this point, Paramount had the Champions League today, and I know they have a bunch of soccer. They have the U.S. men's national team. I can't remember who has the NBA now.
Yeah.
It's all over the place. But if you have more of it.
Yeah. If I want to follow Arsenal, though, that's a great example. If I want to follow Arsenal, mm-hmm. I do need Peacock and Paramount Plus because they're in the Champions mm-hmm. League. There's no unified Arsenal. You've got to, you know, those rights have been split because they're different competitions, but it's the same kind of concept, which is just like, you know, you got to pick. You don't. And part of this, I mean, balkanization and unification, you're right, aggregation, the cable bundle solved this because the cable bundle put all the sports in one place. And now we don't have we do have bundles. The bundles are coming back and there are some sports bundles, but it's not the same as it was where you just said, well, I just signed up for cable and I can see all my sports.
There was a thing the other day about one of the bundles you just spoke about, ESPN with its new ESPN-ness. The app or the direct, however you want to call it, and the bundle with the NFL Plus, which I don't think a lot of people understand what it is. The bundle for that, they said, had more than 1 million subscribers in the first 10 days. And I think some of that is that, yeah, if you're going to buy it, you're going to buy it early because you're going to watch all the NFL games. I don't think that's a big number. I think if I'm the NFL, who always has the top ratings and who people are paying huge amounts of money for the rights, you would think they would want to at least see, you know, the equivalent of the ratings they're seeing on standard linear channels. And that ain't close. So I'm curious about this. I think if this continues, yeah, if Warner Brothers and Paramount merge and it's one app, they're not going to keep the same price. They're going to double it, basically, or whatever the two mixed are going to be. And then they can raise it because there's less choice. I think if that's the case, ESPN might be in the strongest position because some people are going to say, I can't afford that. I just can't do that. But I'm still very interested in my sports. So ESPN has SportsCenter and they can say, hey, you can't afford to see the game. We've got this whole highlights package. And suddenly SportsCenter might become more relevant because you can't see all the games. You can't watch it wherever you are.
Yeah, for those who don't know, NFL Plus is a weird thing, but it means that you can, on a mobile device, I think only, watch your local broadcast NFL games. So basically, like, even if you don't have cable or some other service that shows your local channels, the games that are on your local channels are streamable to your phone or tablet. I think not your TV, because I think that's a separate rights thing and you're supposed to get Sunday Ticket for that, but to your phone. And so it's basically a cord cutter solution of a different kind for NFL games that are basically for your local team.
Yeah, very good explanation. I don't mean that it's difficult to understand. I mean that they haven't done a very good job of explaining why anybody wants it.
Well, it's because you have to start talking about weird rights balkanization. Actually, it is another form of that, which I think in the long run they're probably going to solve, just like Major League Baseball is trying to solve this. I you know, the truth is, well, you know, we could do the same podcast every week for about 5 years now saying everything is a mess because it used to be clear and it's undoubtedly going to be clear again, but right now it's not. And like, everybody knows sort of where it's going, but there are contracts and there's money and there's the classic move, which is even if you know where it's going, but most of the money is where it's been. So you stay where it's been because you need the money, even though you know it's not the right long-term decision, right? That's just what people do. That's what companies do. So we're in this muddy middle here. And I do think, in the long run, yeah, I think this will get worked out. But right now, I think in the short run, and I've been saying this for a while on this podcast, I think this story about balkanization of rights and fans not being able to find their team or having to subscribe to a service or churn, that's the thing that will really happen, is or churn through a service for a couple of months or for the length of the season, because they want to watch that one game, that Netflix game on Christmas Day, and then they drop off Netflix afterward. I think that is going to be a huge story until there is a way, if there ever is, for somebody to say, can I just buy all of I'm a 49er fan. What do I need to pay to just get all the 49ers games? And does the NFL let them do that? Or do all of their media partners say, I'm relying on those people to sign up for Prime Video or NFL Plus or Netflix or whatever, or Peacock in order to see it. And it just, I think, you know, fans are going to get frustrated. And I think the other side note to this is something I know you and I've talked about, which is if it's only available behind a paywall for the hardcore fan, you're kind of going backward in the sense that you're not actually reaching out to the less enthusiastic, the new fans, the kids who don't have their own money, but they do have access to their parents' accounts. Like, you do risk losing those people if you're just catering to the people who are going to be the super fans.
Remember a couple of years ago when Taylor Swift started dating Travis Kelce, and like all of a sudden every Taylor Swift fan like took a weekend and learned the game of football and started breaking down linebacker blitzes and what a tight end actually did. Would that have happened? I don't know. Probably the Swifties would have. But I do think that those secondary fans, those not fanatical must follow a team, you are going to lose some of them because there is a friction. Even if you're just trying to churn through the stations, you only get the 7-day trial once, says a guy who tried to do that with Acorn to watch the new Alicia Silverstone show. But the other thing I think here, and this is a callback to, gosh, I think one of the first podcasts we did together here, I talked about this with Apple Vision Pro. And gosh, where's the sports on Apple Vision Pro, yeah. Apple? I talked about something I call the Infinite Stadium. And for Vision Pro, it'd be great. You put a camera in there and you just let me sit there. I will pay you X dollars to virtually be in the stadium. This was done on Meta. Apple bought that company as kind of the technology behind Vision Pro's cameras, which are now out, but I haven't seen any result of that. You could do the same thing for not virtual reality. You could just put a camera in there and make me seem like I'm sitting at Levi's Stadium. And I will pay you a certain amount of money for that.
Yeah.
When it comes to baseball, I will pay you a certain amount of money not to listen to John Smoltz. I realize there's a mute button, but I believe I should reward somebody for just muting him for me.
Speaking of that, by the way, I think one of the other interesting factors here, this is total tangent that I wasn't intending to talk about, but you mentioned John Smoltz. I do wonder how you handle the connection between the local fans versus the national fans, because I think like MLS, what Apple has done is they put they've got their national announcing crew, and they also have like local radio streams that you can choose to watch. And it's a thing that you can do. The NFL is interesting because there's local radio for teams, but there's always been a nationalized announcing set. And fans don't complain about it so much, although they still do because they're fans. Mm-hmm. It's different with something like baseball, and even you could say basketball and hockey, because
basketball especially,
they have not been nationalized, right? And it makes me wonder, because rights are a little bit similar too. It's like there are fans of the Pacers and there are fans of the NBA. And it strikes me that what you want is to create a product for fans of the Pacers and a product for fans of the NBA, so that some people only want to watch the Pacers games. Other people are like, well, no, I actually want to see what's going on with the Lakers and, you know, the Knicks and like whatever other the Warriors, whatever other teams interest me or have amazing players. I want to know what's going on with them, too. My team's not playing. It's a Tuesday night. Can I go to HBO Max and tune in a game? I do this with MLB. I get the MLB package and I'm a Giants fan. But like during baseball season, if it's an evening or even like during the late afternoon and I'm kind of done for the day and my brain is a little fried, but I have not yet like started making dinner, and the Giants, I'm a West Coast guy, so I can put on the East Coast night games in the background. And it's like, it's great. But like, so there's a challenge here with like, how do you meet a local fan and a larger fan? And can you also, do you choose to do kind of like simultaneous audio streams? Is Rob Manfred's dream for Major League Baseball that it becomes like the NFL, where everything is nationalized except radio? And like baseball would lose so much if it went to that model and didn't also have the great announcers that are experts, TV announcers who are experts in local teams. And I don't know how that all plays out.
I think it's because of the sheer number of games. You know, it's 162 in baseball. Yeah. It's 81 it's 82 in basketball.
Yeah, close to half. Yeah.
And yeah, so people really get used to those announcers. You grow up listening to, you know, Pat Hughes. I do the same thing. It's intriguing to me that you say you would listen to East Coast games early because you're on West. I do the opposite. Because I'm on Eastern time, even in Indiana, it's weird, I know. I will listen to West Coast games while I'm doing my column. And so I ended up, I fell in love with Ichiro early. So that was a benefit when MLB TV first came out. But now I like Orsillo and Grant with the Padres.
Oh, so good.
Care less about the Padres.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just find those guys fun. So, agreed. You know, when there's a choice, unless there's something like, Big Dumper is going for 50 home runs, I'll watch that one. My default now is the Padres. For no other reason than I like the announcers. Now, one of the things I have heard is that with Amazon, they have figured out a way to feed in the radio feed that's synced to the delay.
Yeah.
There used to be, you can find whole Reddit threads of how much each local feed is delayed, and it's usually 1 or 2 seconds consistent. So I'm very intrigued. If they do that, I'll be very intrigued.
I mean, MLB TV and Apple have managed it.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be done. It's all very experimental. I think about that sometimes. It's like, that's one of the challenges they face here. It's not just putting things behind a paywall where casual fans aren't going to find it. It's also, how do you cultivate a kind of a national audience of like this? Like, I mean, the way that I would put this is everybody wants to do Monday Night Football, which is now Sunday Night Football, but everybody wants to do the banner marquee matchup that's in prime time that everybody watches. And you see the NBA does a pretty good job of this too. But you also have a local fan base who just wants to see their team. And like the danger is twofold. One, if you nationalize a lot of these other games, you're making the local fans sad. But your other problem is if every game is an event, no game is. And I think that's the problem is like, okay, if you have Sunday Night Football and Monday Night Football and Friday Night Football, and which they did a few weeks ago before the college season started, and Thursday Night Football. And then with college, similarly, you have games on wild days. It's kind of too much, right?
In action.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it kind of, even as somebody who likes the product, like, I enjoy the NFL. That week where they had Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday games, I turn on Monday Night Football and I was like, I have had enough.
Yeah, I completely get it. The other thing that I often get is I live in Indianapolis, so everyone assumes I'm a Colts fan. So I follow the Colts. I like when the Colts win just because everybody around me is happy, it seems. Sure. And you like good things to happen, but I have no rooting interest for the Colts. I've had greater difficulties with the Colts than most NFL franchises. So I am not a fan of any particular team. Same in baseball. I grew up a Cubs fan, but we broke up. So now I'm a fan of baseball, and usually it's players and people I know. So it's one of those, but they'll constantly ask me, hey, how about those Colts? And I'll be like, yeah, I can talk about it when I do a radio hit, but there are fans who grew up in somewhere else. You know, I have a friend here who is somehow an Arizona Cardinals fan because he grew up in St. Louis. He just, when they left, he is old enough that his fandom went with them. And now that he moved here from St. Louis, he's still a fan. So you would probably try to sell him a Colts package when in fact he wants a Cardinals package. I have this same thing with newspapers or what's left of them, because I want to read a lot of the good beat writers out there for the information and the entertainment, but there's no way to do that.
Right. Because you have to subscribe to every
whole paper,
every single paper. Yeah, right.
It's the worst.
Right. Right. They need a sports bundle of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just what we need, more bundles. Well, I don't know. This is a good conversation that we're going to have to move on from, but like, don't worry, we'll be back, because like this is one of the core conversations of the next 5 years is sports rights and how they get sectioned up, the quest for money and how that works against necessarily minding your audience. And but I will, before we move on, one more aside, because we talked about this a little bit and I want to throw it in here. Prime Vision is one of those. I love an alt cast. We've talked about this. I enjoy the Manning cast. I spent some time watching Prime Vision the other Thursday night. For those who don't know, Prime Vision is not just a stat cast, although it is that on Thursday Night Football, but it's an alt cast that is primarily using Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit to call the game. It's their call of the game. and primarily using the standard broadcast camera angles when it's not a play. But during the play, it's shot entirely in an all 22 from their cable camera behind the quarterback, with some amazing visuals where they're able to tag players like it's a video game. So you can focus on certain players and see where they move. And you can see all 22, which if you're a nerd who likes football, is really interesting because you can see things that you're never going to see in a standard zoomed in view. And they have a you know, the NFL's version of Mike Petrello basically popping in every now and then with an Alexa sound effect to say, oh, and here's a thing that's interesting that you might want to look at right now. And then it goes back, ding, it goes back to Al Michaels. And like,
figure out who that was.
It's a guy. I mean, I don't know who it is either, but I like to think that it's just he's their stat guy, I guess, their Amazon sponsored stat guy. But I will say this. I was intrigued by it because it was like not what so many of these alt casts are, which is even the Manning cast is kind of like the stuff about it that I hate is when it's not paying attention to the game. The stuff that's catnip for me is when it's Eli and Peyton breaking down like about the game. That when it turns into a podcast, I'm not interested. But when they're talking about the game, I think it's really amazing. And Prime Vision is kind of like that, too, where between the view and the guy chiming in every now and then, it's what I like about the idea of an altcast. It's literally just an alternate version of the main broadcast that serves a slightly different purpose. And I'm not sure I actually prefer the alt 22 view. I mean, there's a reason that the zoomed in view is so good, but like on the other hand, especially if it's a game I don't really care about with teams I don't really care about, it is kind of, you know, the more I read and learn about football, it is kind of interesting to look at the all 22 view and say, oh, they've got two tight ends and one back in the, or it's an empty backfield. And you know, this guy's running over here and look at what the, how the defense is and things that you can't do in the normal view. And I'm like, ah, that's kind of fun. So it was a fun little discovery for me. And if you are interested in that sort of thing, give the Prime Vision alt a look sometime on a Thursday night.
I will say they didn't hold the alt 22 version. They kind of tightened in and would do like the box eight a lot there. Let's get geeky. So I didn't love that. I would rather they stick with one or the other. I don't know whether Al Michaels, I certainly know Al Michaels doesn't care.
No.
I don't know if he even knows the other exists, but there was absolutely no tailoring of the announcing. I mean, the one guy would whisper in and
it's
I'm really curious who it is.
It's true.
Because they were using Zebra technology, which is a little chip in the shoulder pads, and it tracks all the players. That's how they know how fast they are, how far they ran.
Right.
I actually heard during a game where somebody had run a 34-yard play, you know, got 34 yards down the field, but it actually run 80. Oh, it's Kyler Murray. He had run 81 yards to get that far because he had, you know, run across the field and around guys and juked back. And I found that intriguing. So the data is out there and sneaking into telecast. The whole concept that it was AI, I thought was just a buzzword because it was really just Zebra and Genius putting something together.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's Amazon's pushing AWS stuff and all of that. Anyway, it's worth looking at just because it intrigued me in a way that a lot of altcasts don't. And I didn't mind that it was the same announcers because I kind of didn't want to lose everything from the main broadcast.
I thought it was good. I thought well constructed.
Yeah,
well,
when I was a kid, they always said in the future you'd be able to choose your camera angle, and this is kind of close to that, where it's like it's still really the same show, and in between plays, it is literally the same show, but they show you a different view during the play, and I'm like, yeah, that's, I kind of like that as an option, just to choose. I wish I could just toggle back and forth, but the Amazon interface forces me to exit and then go back in. And so anyway, this episode of Downstream is brought to you by Factor. Fall always feels like a bit of a reset. Everybody's getting back into their busy routines. The kids are going back to school. My kid went back to college. House is quiet now. Nights are a little colder. You know, days are shorter. Sometimes it's hard to find time to cook. This is why people love Factor, and I love Factor. They have chef-prepared, dietitian-approved meals. They make it easy to stay on track and enjoy something comforting and delicious no matter how hectic the season gets. With Factor, you can enjoy more variety and more meals. Choose from a wider selection of weekly meal options, including premium seafood choices like salmon and shrimp, at no extra cost. you can support your wellness goals, enjoy GLP-1 friendly meals and new Mediterranean diet options packed with protein and good for you fats. You can savor those global favorites. For the first time, try Asian-inspired meals with bold flavors influenced by China, Thailand, and more. For more choices to better nutrition, 97% of customers say that Factor helped them lead a healthier life. You'll feel the difference no matter your routine. I feel the difference. The quality is better. This is not something that you would normally expect from a thing you put in your microwave for a couple of minutes. It tastes so much better than that. They have really cracked the code on making these things reheatable in a way that you can taste. These are fresh ingredients. These are good ingredients. They have done some secret magic to do this, so much so that my wife steals my meals from the refrigerator. I say that all the time. We get these boxes in and then she takes them to work with her and I'm left making peanut butter sandwiches because she's stolen all my Factor meals. And my mom was having trouble feeding herself. She didn't want to cook for herself. We're really worried about her losing weight. And we got her Factor meals and she loves them. The salmon in particular, she raves about the salmon and she likes the chicken too. So it definitely has made a difference. And what can I say? I would not be buying these things for my mom if I didn't think that it worked really well. Eat smart now at factormeals.com/downstream50off and use the code downstream50off to get 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for a year. That's code downstream50off, downstream50off at factormeals.com to get 50% off plus free breakfast for 1 year. Seriously, get delicious, ready-to-eat meals delivered with Factor. Offer only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Thank you, Factor, for feeding my mom, feeding my wife, occasionally feeding me, and for supporting Downstream. Okay, this is something that you brought up, Will, and I wanted to talk about because it is a really good subject, which is the forbidden fruit of sports sponsorship and what it means when the fruit is literally forbidden. The Premier League next year, they're not going to be able to put gambling sponsors as the primary, I think it's primary shirt sponsor, which means that it might be in there a little bit, but you're not going to have like esoteric, obscure, especially to Americans, gambling companies on the front of soccer jerseys in the Premier League. They're not allowing it because of reasons, mostly that gambling is kind of bad for society, but it's also a lot of money and we see it everywhere. So they're like, that is a line too far. We're going to take that off the shirt sponsors, but that's going to cost them presumably a lot of money because you're reducing the number of people who are able to spend money on those sponsorships. Meanwhile, you pointed out that the Trump administration's moving pretty hard against direct-to-consumer pharma ads, drug ads here, which anybody who watches sports knows it is like, how much can I tell you? Can I sing the Sky Rizzy song? I can.
Jardiance.
That's, I have to mute when the Jardiance thing comes on. Anyway, really interesting thing to note about in the sports business, because especially if you're thinking about sports broadcasting, losing drug ads is going to be a huge financial shortfall. And a lot of these broadcasters, I mean, they're paying huge amounts of money because they're going to sell ads and make their money back. And if they lose this valuable swath of advertisers, what does that mean for the future of sports broadcasting? And then I think as a tangent for downstream purposes, but I think it's also interesting, you've got this idea that the kits, not being able to have gambling stuff in the UK really makes you answer the question again, like what happens if revenue streams, modern sports revenue streams are banned? Essentially, what happens then?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because, I mean, just next game you watch, count up how many times you see a pharma ad. And I'm talking pharma adjacent, those Hims ads and Romans ads and all those other things that want to sell you a GLP-1. And then on top of that, DraftKings, FanDuel, MGM, ESPN bet. If you take all of those away, something's got to fill it. And they will. You know, West Ham is going to be able to find somebody who will pay them $5 million to be on the shirt in the same way that Chelsea found someone when Infinite Athlete realized $50 million. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, but it is a revenue stream. And for all those people buying sports rights and collecting them and making us pay greater and greater amounts of money to watch them, that's one of the things that takes away from it, because they've got to get the ads on top of the subscription fees. So I'm curious where this is going. I do think this is going to be a short-term shock to the system, in that, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know what ads come in there. Maybe more movie ads. Maybe David Ellison decides putting ads for, you know, One Battle After Another fits in better than hymns. Who knows with the demographics? But I'm just very curious, because we haven't had that kind of rule censorship. I don't want to say censorship, but that kind of reduction in places, yeah, other than early on DFS, FanDuel, DraftKings, when it was just way too much.
Well, I think the thing to watch here in terms of sponsor revenue is, so I think the story of the last 30 years, 40 years has been expansion of categories, right? Right. There used to not be any hard alcohol ads on TV. And there are every now and then. I think about that when I see a hard alcohol ad and I'm like, wow, didn't used to be allowed, but they let it in there. You've got gambling ads. And if you are in a state that allows gambling ads, there are so many. I live in California where the gambling ads are limited because we don't have legal sports betting. There's still a lot of gambling ads because there's a bunch of national ads that don't cover us that we still see. And then when I visit my mom in Arizona, wow, there are so many, because now all the targeted ads and all the local ads are also about gambling. And you have to go, like, so many things have been added that all the drug ads and all the, like, compound pharmacy, not quite a drug ad, but an ad to get you drugs. Those are all in there. And it's really been since, I would say, probably the cigarette ads got banned, that since then, it's mostly been things being added, not taken away. But in this case, maybe that starts to happen. And I don't know what happens. You're right. Like, to a certain degree, there will always be another sponsor. But if you're reducing the sponsor pool, you're probably reducing the revenue that gets taken in, right? Because now, instead of selling, you know, for X to the makers of this, to a, by the way, enormous pharmaceutical company, now you might sell it for X minus whatever to a beer company. And, like, the beer company's not doing bad, but the pharmaceutical company is doing way better. I'll also point out, reminds me a little bit of when Google was dealing with its antitrust thing. And one of the ways that they were going to punish Google that was proposed was to not pay Apple and Firefox billions and billions of dollars. And it's like, what world do we live in when your punishment is that you get to keep your money? And that seems to be what is going on with the pharmaceutical companies. Is like, no, you can't advertise it there. Just keep that money. It's going to be interesting to see how it might, like I said, I don't think it's going to bankrupt anybody, but I think it will distort sports interesting ways, right? Because they will have to make that money up somewhere else.
Exactly. And you mentioned the cigarette ads, and it used to be Marlboro. NASCAR's big prize was the Winston Cup. They adjusted.
All of my childhood sports highlights are from Candlestick Park, where the Giants and the 49ers played. And until very close to the end of that park, there was a giant Marlboro billboard on the scoreboard. And so every highlight of even Barry Bonds and certainly Jack Clark and certainly Dwight Clark and Joe Montana and Jerry Rice, there's a big Marlboro ad in the background. And they adjusted to those ads being removed from display advertising. But it's an adjustment. And I would argue that every sporting venue is far more commercially laced now than it was 20 years ago. Like,
was it about the same time that they started allowing pharma ads?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think so.
So maybe that's going to fill in. I did see something. Cadillac F1 announced that they're going to have Jim Beam as a sponsor. And everybody's like, oh, my God, Jim Beam's going to be on the side pod. I'm like, no. You can't advertise alcohol in a lot of the countries where F1 is.
Right.
Which is why Heineken, who is a huge sponsor, it's always the Heineken 0.0.
It's the non-alcoholic beer. Yeah.
But yeah, it's still saying
it's
Heineken,
still the brand.
So it's,
I know, it's very
it.
Clever. It's very clever. Another thing for us to watch, but, like, yeah, fascinating to see Every time people tell me that that it's over and like that's a solved thing, I'm like, you know, sorry, not to quote Watchmen here, but it's never over. There's always another challenge that happens and things get weird. And that's just what happens. You put another note in our document about the Canelo Crawford, the boxing match, 41.1 million viewers on Netflix, which is a lot. And the question you've got is like, that was a Saudi Arabian production. So like what happens? Is this what does that mean? The ramifications of getting that boxing match on at more than 40 million viewers on Netflix.
Yeah. A quick explanation. One of the Saudi princes owns a thing called Riyadh Season. And it used to be this one little like 2-week thing in Riyadh, and it's turned into this giant thing. So they're doing a giant comedy festival this year with guys like Kevin Hart, and they're making millions of dollars. They've done race. They're going to have the F1 track eventually. It's way delayed. But Riyadh Season has really taken over boxing. And they've had fights where it's basically just a couple Saudi princes sitting in the front row. They don't care. They've got stupid oil money. They're building cities in the desert. They're building arenas just for WrestleMania in a couple of years. So they've basically taken over boxing. Some of the biggest fights we've had, Usyk Fury, Joshua Usyk, ones at lower weight classes. The Canelo Crawford fight was at 168, and Crawford had been at 148 in his previous fight. So he was coming up 2 weight classes, still managed to win.
Yeah.
Solidifies himself as one of the all-time greats, beating one of the all-time greats, and it still did like half the number of the Jake Paul Tyson debacle. Their next fight is Jake Paul versus a guy who fought at 136. Jake Paul last weighed in at 191. I don't know if they're going to meet in the middle or what. Boxers usually walk around at a higher weight. But I'm curious, because they have this kind of really control of boxing. They don't care about the WBC or the WBO or the IBF, which is long plagued boxing, or the promoters, because they have all the money to just buy out the promoters. Are they going to get into more business with Netflix? 41.1 is not a small number, but if you can just put on Jake Paul events and do a bigger number, does Netflix need it?
That's true. That's true. It's interesting to see Netflix's experimentation with live sports as well. But by the way, the YouTube Brazil NFL game only generated a little less than 20 million viewers, which is not bad, not spectacular. A lot of the analysis was like, it's okay. It was also a weird timed game at the very beginning of the season. But it also had some pretty good teams in it. So, you could argue it, I think, either way. And that's a rounded up number. They originally, I think they said it was 16 something. And then Nielsen came out with, after we counted everybody, I guess the 19.7, something to watch there, because I think YouTube and Netflix, especially like their experimentation with sports in a lot of ways kind of continues. And I think you make a really good point, which is like, it's great that the Saudis have built this sports machine with their huge amounts of money. But I think you also say Netflix is itself a sports machine, yeah. Right?
There could be, they still experiment with live. The whole David Chang Live is still quirky. The live events they do. Yeah. I'm curious why they're not doing more of these small ones, which makes me think there's more of a cost. I mean, couldn't you do a watch along for Wednesday premiere? With the cast and crew, could you do one? Stranger Things is coming out, and that's going to be a massive event for them. There are a lot of things they could do that they haven't done, and these are smart people. They have to realize either it's not going to make money or it's not going to get us subscribers, which is kind of the same thing. They know what moves the needle, and I'm very curious what in sports does and how much that needle has to move.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one, too. I'd like to move on to letters from our listeners. I have a letter here, by the way, downstreamfeedback.com. If you'd like to send us a letter, we would love to hear from you. This one is from Chris, who says, streaming services are always trying to eke out more revenue from each of their users. At this point, I think I would be willing to pay more for a version of HBO Max without any Discovery content. Is there an upsell opportunity? Chris, isn't that a downsell we're talking about there? Well, I think if David Zaslav has his way, as we said at the top of the show, there will be a way to do that because they'll take Discovery and spin it out. But Chris is really, I think, asking a question about forced bundling, which I think is interesting. It feels to me, though, like bundles are the way to go. But the good news there is that you may be able to pick your bundle. The bad news is what gets stuffed in the bundle. And that was the true with the cable bundle, right? Where there would be a lot of garbage stuffed in the bundle. Mm-hmm. You have to take, you want ESPN, you got to take all the Disney channels, and you know, you want TNT, you got to take all the Warner channels. And that's just how it goes. What do you think?
Yeah. When I read this question, at first I was just like, okay, this is kind of snarky, Chris.
Yeah.
But it got me thinking. So good question, good. Chris. I think this might be the upsell opportunity. Let's say you could buy a version of just the channel you wanted. And you can do this for any of these. Let's say you wanted just Marvel movies on Disney and not the kid stuff. Or, you know, hey, I hate National Geographic for whatever reason. what if they did split them off, but you had to buy it for a year? Because they're all talking about churn. So it might be less, but locked in. There are a million ways to do this. I don't know how they would. The technical issues, whether it makes sense for money. This is why I'm not Sal Saperstein. But I do think there's something here, whether it's an upsell, whether it's a downsell, whether it's a balkanization. We're balkanizing the Balkans again. Yeah. You know, we're going to get...
Again, apologies to Yugoslavia.
We're going to get Bosnia and Herzegovina.
I know.
And just, so
Slovenia is so mad at us right now.
So mad. shout out Melania Trump. It's one of those where I think you could split this all out. This, like you said, this is the same discussion we had about a la carte cable channels. And you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes.
I think what I would say too is it seems, I agree, it seems like a ridiculous question, and yet you think about it and you're like, but I think if Disney is bundling, let's say, Hulu and Disney Plus and ESPN, what they've decided is their content is not one thing, it's three things. And that they're allowing their users to mix and match, and they're making it easy for them to mix and match. In fact, you really, really want to get Hulu and Disney Plus, but they also want you in the bundle. And it does make me wonder if in the long run, Disney, as it raises its price and everything is a lot more expensive, mm-hmm. there's more room underneath. I talked about this with Apple having mm-hmm. raised prices and having room underneath to do an ad tier if it wants to. Well, Disney, think about that room underneath again. Once you are at $20 a month or whatever, you have room underneath to play around with other products that are not going to be as successful, you know, they're not as expensive, but it gets people in the door and you can put ads on it. But another thing is, yeah, what if they said, you know what, maybe we could do a Disney Vault membership? Or maybe there's a Marvel Unlimited that includes the existing Marvel Unlimited where you can read like comic books and stuff, which I subscribe to. And they're like, we're going to actually let you watch Marvel movies, the Marvel tile on Disney Plus as part of Marvel Unlimited, but just that tile, but you can bundle it in, or it's an extra service with some other things that's separate. Like, I don't know which ones of those make sense or not. And I think that people should probably be working at Disney and be paid a lot of money to kind of work through all these scenarios. But like, it strikes me that if once you've got a bunch of bundles and you've got, and you like the idea of having bundles, including internal company bundles, then maybe it does sort of make sense to say, like, would David Zaslav ultimately have been better if he had said a Disney-like, we have a Discovery bundle with HBO? And you can get HBO over here and Discovery, but it's really better if you pay for them together. And if you wanted to be Chris and say, I'd rather not, you say, okay, like, okay, we don't need you here. Maybe Disney does something where they're like, similarly, again, Marvel or Star Wars. Maybe those are more like you tie that into a fan bundle with other things that are part of the property. But Disney, the Disney tile of family movies, the Disney vault, like the Disney streaming vault, what if you say, we have a new thing that we're going to market to parents. which is access to the Disney streaming vault. And it's on its own, it's going to be $15 a month or something like that. And it's like, it's less than Disney Plus. It doesn't have any ads because it's for little kids, and it gets you in the door and it gets your kids addicted to the Disney stuff. And then maybe you graduate to Star Wars and Marvel later. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but certainly when it was $5 or $6 for Disney Plus, there was no room for that kind of thing. Now there is.
Yeah, you know, last week, I think it was when Lilo or Lilo and Stitch, I don't know.
What's Lilo?
The movie, the live action movie, which still had a cartoon in it.
Yeah, because they're actually animated, but yes.
Yeah, they changed their like splash screen. The Disney Plus kind of, there's the sound effect and the arch and little Stitch, I guess he is, rolls across my screen. And I'm like, I don't have any interest in watching this one any more than I did the other one. Disney movies are fine. There's nothing against it. But I don't remember the last Disney thing I watched on Disney Plus. I've watched a lot of Hulu.
Right.
I've watched the last Marvel movie, which wasn't great. But you know, why are they trying to sell me on this when they already have my money?
Yeah.
I didn't get that.
But I will say, to Chris's point, I think it's far more likely that you'll have a scenario like I mentioned, where there's a way to take a slice of the pie and put it over here as a separate product, than it is to say, I'd like to remove items from my thing. Right? That's not quite the same. And I feel like that's less likely.
You don't have to eat the spinach, Chris.
Right. Yeah. They still want that. All right. Really interesting letter. Thank you, Chris. That brings us to our final segment, which is television picks, where we tell you some things that you might want to watch on TV. Will, what do you have?
I've got one. You know, Netflix did the whole redesign and tried to do Discoveries, you know, so you discover more, not Discovery the network. But it actually worked for me. There was a show. It's a Swedish show, I think, somewhere Scandi, called The Breakthrough, which is about this.
I hope we're not going to have to apologize to Scandinavia now, too.
Sorry. you may send it to me.
It's Swedish.
I do think it's Swedish. And it's called The Breakthrough. It has a foreign name, but it's a fictionalized true crime. They're doing this. It was like 40 years, total cold case, and then they figured it out through this genealogical database. And somehow it was great. And I recommend watching it on Netflix. It's called The Breakthrough.
On Netflix. That's really cool. I'm going to be lazy. And since the Emmys just happened, I'm going to re-up Somebody Somewhere, which is on HBO Max.
Have to watch that.
Jeff Hiller won an Emmy. It's a show like the stakes are low. There are just people's lives, which, you know, on a personal level is the highest stakes because it's your life. But it's like, it's not trying to be something kind of bigger than it is, which is about these people who are interconnected. And it's funny and it's sweet and it's sad, but it's mostly funny. And it is set in Kansas. Kind of nice to be in a sort of small town in Kansas. And like, I grew up in a small town in California, but I like the flavor of it being kind of a rural area that's still got its misfits. And it's kind of hard sometimes to be a misfit out in a rural area as well. It's a very nice, fun show. Jeff Hiller's performance is great. I'm amazed, as everybody is, that he won the Emmy, but he totally deserves it. And I'll also throw in The Pitt, which won the Best Drama Emmy, and I really enjoyed, and that's also on HBO Max.
I did. I just watched this because I was so behind on it. I knew it was going to win. Everyone is talking great about it and not knocking it. Good performances, interesting shows, but it's ER. Oh my God, it's ER. I know there was a controversy about this with the Crichton Estate and other people. It's John Wells. It's Noah Wiley.
It is.
Again, it's really, really well done, but oh my God, it is ER. If you just call this ER the reboot, it works.
It's not. Well, this is the thing. I'd say it's not ER in the sense that it is a modern take on what a show like ER was trying to do to medical shows back then. It is a modern version of that. We're trying to do something because it's all set in one single day. That's very different from what ER used to do, but it is propulsive.
ER 24.
It is ER 2024.
I do think the format worked. Yeah. I'll completely agree with you on that. The format did work. And so,
you mean ER and
Kiefer
Sutherland 24. You're right. It is kind of like that. That it's not quite real time, but it's close enough. So I've got a really quick take here that's not going to please some people, and too bad for them, which is The New York Times did a story about the lawsuit between the Crichton Estate and Warner Brothers over this. And it sounds like basically there are morons at Warner Brothers who didn't read the contract and realized that Amblin Entertainment, so Steven Spielberg, the Crichton Estate, and Warner Brothers have to all approve any future ER-related projects. And they started ahead with an ER reboot without that. And then Michael Crichton's last wife, who was his widow, but I would also point out the New York Times had the knives out for her because they introduce her in saying that she was only married to him for like 3 years before he died. And it's like, who is this lady? But I think on the other hand, the way I feel about it, I think it's fair. She's decided, no, you're going to pay me, or you're going to pay his kids, but you're going to pay the family for this. Her argument seems to be that the agreement to make ER means that Noah Wiley and John Wells and Warner Brothers are not allowed to make a medical show because all medical shows stem from the great work of the spec script that he wrote in the 70s that they turned into ER in the 90s. And I would like to believe that if that goes to trial, that there's no way that you're going to be able to say that these people are encumbered to the point where they can't make a hospital show because they used to work on a hospital show. In fact, my argument would be, well, when they found out they couldn't make it ER, they changed it. But like, so they changed it to take all the characters out, but the characters were the only thing connecting it to ER. And I would argue the pit is better because nobody felt the need at any point to make a reference to Eric LaSalle or George Clooney or Juliana Margulies, right? They're like, no, it's just a new show now. And he doesn't have to be John Carter anymore. He can be Dr. Robbie, and he can be a little bit different, and we can leave that behind. I think it's a better show, but also I just cannot believe there is any way, and I'm not a lawyer, so other people believe otherwise, that you could say these guys can't make a medical show because ER. It just doesn't work for me. But
I completely agree with you, but they basically made ER. If they had made just a medical show, I agree with you.
I think if you look at what ER is, this is like, what if we did what we did for ER again? But I'm very much on their side that I just don't think you can map the characters. I think a medical show is a medical show. I think this reads like a modern medical show. Obviously, ER was an inspiration because that's how it started. But I just have a hard time believing that there's some sort of a poison, fruit of a poison tree that is, oh, well, you worked on ER, so you can't ever do a show that's kind of like ER again. I'm not sure Michael Crichton owns that. I think his estate jointly owns the name ER and the franchise ER, and that they would have. But make no mistake here, Warner Brothers screwed this up because they didn't know that contract existed. I don't believe they knew and didn't care. I believe they didn't know and they stepped in it. And Michael Crichton's widow is going to probably make them pay and put a credit somewhere saying, you know, appreciation for the work. What does it say in the Terminator about Harlan Ellison? Appreciation for the work. It's a nonsense. Like, we paid you and we said we had to credit you, but we're also not going to give you a story credit. So, appreciation.
Speaking of which, I don't know if you know this one. I noticed this season in Foundation, Isaac Asimov's daughter, granddaughter, I'm not sure, has a credit as a producer. Was that always there?
Yeah, that was always there. The Asimovs have always been credited, a little like how Gene Roddenberry's kid is credited in Star Trek. It's not really, I don't think it's actually legally required for Roddenberry. It may be for Asimov because those are obviously still copyrighted on that, but the Asimovs are around. His daughter was a writer for the San Francisco Chronicle for many years, which is kind of funny too. I would see Asimov bylines and I'd be like, amazing, right? But yeah, they're there because the rights are there. It is a weird story, but regardless, the Pitt, Warner Brothers might have to pay them or might not, but the Pitt will be coming back early next year for 15 more episodes, which I think is one of the, if we talk about a broader trend, which we didn't really get into here, I think we've talked about on this podcast before, the Pitt was built, and they even said so on stage at the Emmys, kind of as, what if we did a network style drama with lots of episodes that comes back every year that is cost manageable because it's primarily shot on a single set, but in a way that they can do what so many streamers, as Julia and I always talked about, have struggled to do, which is create a show that has a lot of episodes because those are the ones that stream the best over time. Mm-hmm. They have a catalog, and yet they've all been coming from broadcast TV, and HBO Max which doesn't have a broadcast network, said what Casey Bloys was like, well, let's do this thing and see how it worked. And it worked really well. So you're going to see a lot more of that because everybody's going to copy them and they're going to take the wrong lessons from them and all the usual things that happen. But it's still interesting. It's going to be interesting to watch the ramifications of the Pitt's success. So
to be clear, it was good. Watch it.
It's a good show. It's a lot of fun. Very propulsive. And it is. Yeah, it is ER and 24. Very watchable. Just a good show. Somebody pointed out that Severance, it's made more, almost as many episodes as Severance, and it took them, you know, 1 year, and Severance, it took them 3 years, and Severance cost twice as much probably. And it's true. Severance is a totally different show with a totally different scope, and I love it. And they're not comparable, but I do think it makes the point that you could do both and that's okay.
Yeah, probably do both. Way more, because I know the Pitt took on that weird sort of, you make what you make, we're only paying this amount. Elspeth, which also a fun show, even if a network formula.
That's a network show. Yeah.
But it's like, if you're going to be this week's villain, you make, I want to say it's 150,000. And if you're a secondary character, you make this. No negotiation.
Yeah.
And they've had lots of people. They did the same with the Pitt for a number of them.
A little cost control going on there. All right. That brings us to the end. If you have not yet, consider subscribing to Downstream Plus. This was a full-sized episode for everybody, although Downstream Plus subscribers didn't hear the ads. The only way to hear the complete version of our next episode and hear ad-free episodes is to subscribe. Go to downstream.plus for that to subscribe and support the show. You are the reason that we still do this show. Thank you so much for being a supporter if you already are. Also, stjude.org/relay if you'd like to donate to St. Jude. We would really appreciate that. This is the month for that. Again, downstreamfeedback.com if you want to send us questions or suggestions. Love to your mothers. We love hearing from you. You can find me at sixcolors.com and at many other podcasts here at Relay and over at theincomparable.com as well. Will, where can people find you?
Underthenife.substack.com if you care not only about sports, but baseball injuries.
Baseball injuries. I do. And then there's little extras you throw in there, too. But it's really great. If you do fantasy, especially, it's worth it. But also, if you'd like to learn things about the state of the kind of amazing, in some cases, state of injury treatments in modern medicine, sports medicine, it couldn't recommend it highly enough. Thank you again for being here, Will.
Thanks for having me. It's always an honor.
And thanks to everybody out there for listening. We'll see you next time.